You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Alan is here. How are you going, Alan?
I'm very well. Not as well as you, obviously. You are bouncing today. My goodness.
So much energy because I'm just out of the house. I'm ready to chat science because Dear Science always puts me in the best mood.
Oh, there we go.
And I hope a lot of you listeners at home feel the same. So I wanted to make a little joke about tackling things because that
Indeed.
Is kind of the theme of today.
I saw what you did there, yeah.
Thank you very much. Our first topic for today, magnets tackling cancer cells. This is quite interesting.
Indeed it is. So cancer is a nasty disease, as everyone is aware of. And so obviously we want to be able to treat it, get rid of it. Some things we use at the moment can work. So chemotherapy can work, but you know, other times it doesn't work. So what we need is a more sort of targeted approach to cancer. So how do we do that? The question is, how do you target cancerous cells, without targeting the healthy cells that surround them?
And that's kind of the problem with radiotherapy, chemotherapy.
Absolutely,
Lots of collateral damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, they try and localize it as much as they can, but, you know, you're always going to get, as you say, collateral damage. Mm. So how do you get around that? Well, some workers at Sheffield University in the UK are looking at a two-pronged approach to this, and this is really quite interesting. So they are, in their own words, using bugs as drugs, which I think is a nice phrase.
That's catchy.
Yeah. So what they are looking at is viruses that specifically target tumours, okay? And these are called oncolytic viruses, okay? And some of these are naturally occurring, or some of these can be modified in the lab to essentially target the cancer cells and leave the healthy ones alone. Now, this has been known, or these viruses have been known for probably about a decade or so, and it was 2015 that the first of these was recognized by the FDA in the States, in which you always need FDA approval for treatments and stuff like that. And so what they are looking at in Sheffield is the modified, dare I say it, herpes simplex virus.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Now, that's not the nasty herpes one. This is the one that gives you cold sores and everything, not the other.
So the nice herpes, for you listeners at home. The good kind.
The good herpes, yeah.
The more simple one.
Good herpes and evil herpes.
Oh, dear. No, indeed.
Okay. Benign. We'll go with benign.
Okay, so they are... as I said, they're working with this virus, and basically once this virus hits a cancer cell, and the cancer cell just splits open and dies. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's really, really good. Trouble is, this is a virus, and the human body is pre-programmed to destroy viruses that come into it. So we have a problem here. We've got these viruses that can technically target specifically cancer cells, but at the moment you can only use them for melanomas, for skin cancers, for things that are not too deep, okay? So anything on the surface, and then basically the your white body or your white blood cells, your defenses, you know, your T cells, all that sort of stuff, they don't have time to be able to attack the viruses before the viruses do their job.
But that does pose a problem when we want to think about cancers deeper inside.
Absolutely. So somehow you've got to be able to direct these viruses to the cancer cells if they are deep inside. How do we do that? So this is really clever. Somebody's thinking, you know, very, very clever. And it's blindingly bloody obvious in hindsight. Why don't we use magnets?
Oh, my God.
I know. Okay. So what they are going to do, or what they are in the process of doing, is they are putting tiny little nanoparticles of iron oxide into these viruses. Okay. Tiny, 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 you know, unimaginably small things. Mm. And you say, well, where do they come from? Well, it just turns out that some bacteria in nature actually generate these iron nanoparticles
as part of their
defense systems. Okay. Mm. So what they are doing is they are employing these bacteria to make these tiny little nanoparticles, to put them in the virus, and then all they need to do is put a magnet over the tumor, and the virus is going to be attracted to where the magnet is. And,
wow.
You know, I think that's just genius. That's very, very clever stuff.
Yeah.
At the moment, they're in the middle of animal trials on this. Again, you've probably got to watch the space, as we say often on this program, because science is ever-evolving, isn't it? You know, science never ends, you know, and it's always about doing better and better and better. And, you know, this sounds really... really, really promising. So you're combining two technologies there, and, you know, we'll see how this goes.
It's almost combining technology and then your more holistic forms of treatment, if you think about it, kind of that natural, I don't know, maybe if you guys are listening, you guys are very prone to a more holistic approach to illness. But I feel like this kind of reconciles a lot of different things where you have particles from the soil. So you can just say that, you know, the dirt's been treating cancer.
No, it's very, very, very clever stuff, this.
It's amazing.
So,
And also amazing, this is a good news day. So I think that's why we're all in a great mood. Tasmania has gone carbon negative, which is an impressive feat, especially given the state of the world currently.
Amen.
So what's happened there?
Well, so Tasmania, I guess, is well known for being well vegetated, shall we say. So I'm not sure what percentage of the island's covered in trees and stuff, but it's a pretty fair, you know, it's like Fiordland on steroids, probably, I'd say. However, so some researchers at ANU, the Australian National University, and Griffith University, two universities in Oz, have been essentially coming up with a carbon budget for all of the states in Australia and looking at how they've been doing over the past few years in terms of carbon emissions. And they were quite surprised to find that when they started looking at Tasmania, Tasmania went from a net carbon emitter in around about 2010 or so to now a net carbon consumer, as it were. So it's they're actively taking carbon out of the atmosphere to the tune of around about 22 million tonnes of carbon per year.
Wow.
And the way that they've done that, seemingly, is to stop logging. Okay, so there was a lot of native logging going on there. And so in around about 2011, 2012, they started, no pun intended, cutting that back. Ka-ching!
My mood's been ruined.
On fire, on like, fire.
You took the opportunity and ran with it.
That caught me so off guard as well.
But anyway, all jokes aside, that's what they did. And what they found was that that seems to have certainly slowed down carbon emissions and or decreased carbon emissions to the point now where they are net carbon consumers, which is great news. Obviously, they've got the right conditions to be able to do all this. So you wouldn't think of any other state in Australia, with possible exception maybe of Queensland with all the tropical forest and stuff up there. You know, they haven't really got the conditions that Tasmania has got. But, you know, it's good news for a small part of the planet, I guess. And, you know, this is what they call sustainable forestry. So they're still logging, but they're making sure that, you know, everything that they log, every tree that they log, is going to be replaced, you know, somehow by another tree. So, you know, they log one, they plant one, sort of thing. So, you know, great news. Well done, them. And, you know, let's see if we can do that as well, I guess. Or
It almost seems like common sense, though, that, you know, if you reduce logging and actually have more trees available as a carbon sink, you would have a better carbon outcome.
Well, it's very interesting, actually, because one of my colleagues across the road at AUT has just submitted a paper looking at lawns, of all things.
Oh.
And you'd think, okay, lawns, so what? You know, mowing lawns, parks, all that sort of stuff. Turns out that they are net carbon emitters. Mowing your lawn and all of that sort of stuff is not great for the environment, and it would be far, far better if you replaced all of your lawns with trees.
I guess the suburbs wouldn't love that, though. I don't think people would love having a little jungle in their front yard.
You couldn't run very far in the park without running into a bloody tree, I guess, but
but you're absolutely right.
So, you know, kind of, and you know, things like grass verges on motorway and stuff like that, you know, they sort of figured out how much of the planet was covered in these sorts of quote-unquote unnecessary lawns, and, you know, it is quite a fair old whack, so interesting stuff.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Keep us posted on that one.
Absolutely. As ever.
So maybe if you guys mow your lawns, stop. we'll see how that goes. Heading over, not overseas, out of orbit.
Indeed.
We're talking about the moon, and this is completely unrelated. That was a really terrible segue as well, I'm sorry. Canada has decided to escalate its war on crime.
Absolutely.
And now it will prosecute crimes on the moon. And I don't know what kind of crimes happen on the moon, but can't be many.
I mean, it's such a Canadian thing to do, isn't it? Honestly, you know. Yeah. No disrespect to any Canadians listening, but, you know, you wouldn't expect the Americans to sort of, you know, prosecute crime or something like that in outer space. But this is what Canada has just done. So a couple of weeks ago, they voted 181 to 144 to pass this law, basically saying that any criminal acts committed by Canadian astronauts either on the moon or circling the moon in this proposed thing called the Lunar Gateway Space Station, which apparently is going to be orbiting the moon maybe in 5-6 years time or something.
Wow.
So any crimes committed by Canadian astronauts there are going to be prosecuted as if they were committed
under
in
Canadian
Canada.
Law.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now we've got the first moon law, for goodness sake. And, you know, you'd think that this sounds really, really nuts. And you ask the question, okay, so who's going to be committing crimes in space?
Mm.
Well, there's an answer to that. There is, in fact, precedent for this.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my
so
God.
In 2019, there was an astronaut on the International Space Station by the name of Anne McLean. And she was estranged from her spouse at the time. And what she did on the International Space Station, she was up there for half a year, she supposedly was accessing her ex-spouse's bank accounts from the International Space Station.
Wait,
I kid you not. I kid you not.
Wow. I mean, I guess your connection must be pretty good if you're that close
goodness.
To the satellites, etc. But that's bonkers.
Even more bonkers, it was all made up.
Oh my God.
Yes, by the ex-spouse. So apparently, the ex-spouse is now waiting trial on this. So it wasn't really a crime committed in space, but you know.
But
it's
thought,
gonna happen.
You know, just in case.
Just in case someone else
wanted to hack into bank accounts on the moon.
But Canadians don't commit crimes. They're nice, you know.
Hey, but this sounds like Tom Cruise's next movie idea.
Prosecuting means, because I've done a bit of reading on Antarctica.
Right.
And crimes committed in Antarctica by any citizen of a certain country will be prosecuted under that country's law.
Law, right.
And I was looking at the list of crimes because that's genuinely fascinating to me. And it shows what my habits look like. Most of them just involve alcohol. I'm not joking. They're all like drunken incidents. And I think one incident was when these two Russian scientists were playing a game of chess and one of them lost and just lost his mind and started attacking the other one with like an ice pick or something.
Ooh, okay.
So,
all right.
I mean, I don't know if maybe space madness is a thing, but you'd be up in space losing your mind playing a chess game and then...
Well, the obvious, you know, take-home message from that is don't let chess or alcohol in space.
Well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah, so we've solved.
Maybe
solved.
Canada didn't even need to pass this law. Amazing. On that note, that brings us to the end of Dear Science for another week.
Absolutely.
And I hope you all learned something, as usual.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.